And I said to myself, I'm going to write my anti-resume and take it into work. And so he did. And he plopped this anti-resume down on the boardroom table in front of his executive leadership. And he said, this is all the stuff that I've done that I'm not proud of. This is the stuff that probably will make some of you want to get up and leave the room and not work with us anymore. But I want to challenge everyone here to go home and write your own anti-resume and bring it back, and let's all share them together. Ooh. And he said, the results were phenomenal. He said, there was never something I've ever done in my, you know, decades of leading, teams that coalesced a whole team, you know, functioning together, giving each other empathy, being understanding and very supportive of each other as that exercise.
Brian Turner, my friend.
Les Raymond.
Coming on the podcast.
Lovely to see you, man. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a real treat.
We've talked for a long time about you coming on the podcast.
Yes.
And now you have your own podcast. And I was like, well, that's a perfect chance to come on and talk about what you do.
Yes.
For the listeners, a little background. We met, Brian, in the gym environment. You came and got training from me at the gym. And I found that you were really fun to work with because you were very interesting. You had a background of like yoga, which I also had a background in, and we shared that. But you were very interested in like learning as you did and understanding why you're doing stuff. And you really embraced like the deep dives of the nuance within human movement. And that made it fun for me as a coach for you to like challenge you. And which honestly, in my experience in the gym, is kind of rare because the average population that comes in asking for help just doesn't have like the athletic capabilities or the interest. And I can't push them with the, I would say, more fun stuff to do in the gym, but you ate it up really well. And that was kind of a nice introduction. And over that time, we have become friends. And I consider you a good friend now. And
likewise.
You have your own expertise, and I'm always picking your brain about it. And now the relationship has morphed into golf buddies now. And you've pulled me back into an old passion of mine of golfing, which has been really fun and exciting and frustrating. And,
it's another challenge of movement patterns. Yeah, big time, big time. Yeah. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me. And thank you for chiding me because you really pushed me along to not just get busy recording my podcast, but get busy publishing it. I think your advice was ready, fire, aim. So thank you for that, man.
Yeah, well, I remember when I started my podcast, I wanted to do it for like a year before I hit record.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's just like fear of failure or people won't like it, or like whatever, you know, insecurity you have deep down will just hold you from push and go. And I definitely saw that in you. And when I would hear you, your podcast, The Brian Turner Show, is about many things in like the money and wealth categories, especially the things outside of the numbers that are associated with money that we'll get into and I'll let you talk about. But it was clear that you were very passionate and took a very, I don't know if holistic view is the right word, but a very different view than I was used to hearing people talk, and a real care and passion for all the like the family dynamics and the generational dynamics that are associated with money. And I thought it was great. And I thought, you know, as I know you already kind of wanted, you should be a conduit to share these broader messages around how people, you know, relate to their money. And so I'm really excited for you to start this new podcast. And I guess I'll shut up and let you talk about what it's about and why it was important for you to start.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yeah. And we have begun publishing. So we're out there in the wild now. Apple, Spotify, and YouTube, I think, are our main thrusts into the market. But yeah, the genesis of it for me was, as you say, a real passion about investing in people, right? So I think as an investor professionally, so to back up in my day job, my profession, I'm a wealth advisor to mostly private clients, so, you know, individuals and families. I wax into some work with businesses and nonprofits as well. But what I kept hearing and carrying with me throughout my evolution as an advisor is the undercurrents of what rhymes in people's experiences. You know, we all come to our own place of financial success or, you know, feeling as if perhaps we're getting close to that ever fleeting word called enough from very different pathways. And what I enjoyed very much, because just to let you know, I grew up without any coaching from my family. I did not grow up in a family that talked about money or what it took to sort of plan and map out a pathway or a course, as you would say, to sort of forecast where I wanted to be, why, how I could get there. And so not really knowing what I wanted to do as a child, I felt as though once I'd been installed in the role of an advisor, you know, of course, done my studies and spent a lot of time observing how more seasoned advisors conducted their affairs with clients, it seemed to me as if most of my colleagues were attracted to the dollars and the money. And that's the lane that they're comfortable in, right? They enjoy discussing the vicissitudes of markets and what's working and what we should, you know, tweak a little bit on the dials here and there to keep people properly allocated or exposed to their version of what is an optimal amount of risk. And to me, what is really the joy of sitting with people for hours on end is you get to hear what makes them tick. You get to see how they respond to certain comments or ideas or events in the world, how they light up when they talk about their families or their ambitions, or how their perspectives have changed over time. And, you know, for me, that is the nectar. That is what allows me to connect people with not just purpose and sort of be a provocateur to remind people of purpose through, you know, some semblance of financial conscience, if you will, sitting in the room with them. But it also allows me to get a much better understanding of what is the right amount of throttle and what's the right amount of brake for people. Because ultimately, managing money is really just about meeting the expectations for someone's lifestyle, right? What do they want to do? How would they want to live? And so as these stories kept coming through to me, I thought, well, what a shame that most advisors are only comfortable living in money land, right? There are thousands of these podcasts or talking heads on TV or whatever you will that want to talk about what's going to happen in an unknown future. And I think that is ridiculous. There are an infinite number of possibilities of what could take place in the world, as in the markets. Of course, we try to steer people to what's most probable. But beyond that is really making the measure of a person and allowing and having a platform for these wonderful people whom I've met over many, many years of doing this in my career to express themselves and to just put their story out there as perhaps a beacon for others to, you know, listen to and learn by is what excited me the most. And I've cited this book in a couple of the episodes that I've published already, but there was a great book that I read when I was very new in the business called The Millionaire Next Door. And what I thought was wonderful and revelatory about it was that the authors did a very thorough study of a cross-section of America. You know, who are the people that are truly wealthy? Meaning who could quit work and live their life, right? Who wasn't living paycheck to paycheck. And what they found was extraordinary in that it's not the people one would look at driving flash, you know, cars or wearing fancy clothes or whatever that look as though they have the trappings of wealth. That's in their, you know, sort of world, a big hat, no cattle problem, right? Like they say in Texas. And the millionaire next door is someone who drives a car that is probably a used car, has tens, if not hundreds of thousands of miles on it. They own businesses. They live in neighborhoods where they've always lived, right? They never sort of wanted to get up and out as that sign of upward mobility. They keep it quiet and close to the vest. And what I loved about that was that, of course, it's such an antipole to what we tend to highlight in American society or media as, hey, this is the paradigm you should be pursuing. You should be wanting the coolest stuff, and that will bring you happiness. And what I found in my day-to-day practice was, no, that it's exactly wrong. In fact, the more we chase the stuff, the more I think many people use it as a shield to attract attention, but not really do the work, right? So as a yogi, you mentioned I did yoga, as you did. One of the most important things I learned is that the way out of a lot of suffering that we experience in life is to go inward. It's not to pull the rest of the world toward you and feel as though, okay, if I just had this, or if I just had that, or if I just could grab that woman and, you know, plug her into my life, or whatever it is, then that's the answer and I'll be happy. And this is a constant struggle for people, and I haven't solved this completely myself, right? But the way out is in is a very powerful statement. And I think what attracted me to you as well is this idea that you understand that there is a true link between health and wellness and feeling richness in your life, right? So your episode that I taped with you on my podcast is due to air, I believe, next week, actually. So I don't know when this will be published, but I think you're coming soon. Okay. And one of the most wonderful things you said in our sit down together was that money buys you time, and that time is the most precious resource. And so what I wanted to display or showcase is a very large smattering of our population, people who I think have very compelling stories and great perspectives that they've developed over time, and sometimes through very difficult adversity and all sorts of, you know, tribulation. But at the end of the day, they've arrived at a perspective that I think is very refreshing and very needed in this time. I think we are inundated with how must I or should I consume in order to feel, you know, that I'm running the race in the pack with the rest of society here in America. And I think in some ways that is it's a canard, right? It's a totally false paradigm. It's basically, in my estimation, purported by business so that you will feed businesses your money. And then thanks for coming and see you next time is what the business says, right? And then you've got to go sort out your backyard in your own time. That's not their problem. It becomes yours. So this idea of investing in people, paying yourself first, was really what motivated the show to begin with. And it's morphed into all sorts of, you know, wonderful offshoots from there. So I'm having a blast, and I can't thank you enough for all of your provocations. You know, initially I wanted to call my podcast Wealth Care because I found that there are incredible synchronicities, of course, between health in general and how wealthy we feel. You know, health seems to be it, or one of the real big ones that provides people with purpose, you know, time, and a sense of well-being. Off we've gone, and we're rocking and rolling, man. I'm having a lot of fun.
Well, I congratulate you on it. I'm happy for you, and I'm excited to see how it unfolds for you.
Thank you.
And yeah, I mean, you just touched on so many things, and I mean, I think on some level, most people could probably relate to knowing somebody that seems to have more money than they need and is unhappy, like objectively just unhappy. And I mean, people that seem to have either just enough to get by or maybe not really enough. And they seem to really get the most out of being alive. And there's something to that. And there's so much to learn there. And we think, like you say, and it's driven by business probably, and culture and societal pressures and screens. And I mean, advertising is such a monster in our culture. It's like they pry into your, you know, they extract your insecurity, whatever is that weakness inside you, and they make you want to have, you know, keep up with the Joneses or whatever. Like I have a buddy that, I mean, he used to buy supercars. Like I buy white t-shirts on Amazon, you know, it was like every month, just pick one up. And I remember watching, like, it was this as if the next one was going to be the one that was satisfied the itch.
That's right.
But it was just like chasing a ghost. And I, you know, he's also a friend of mine, but I've been out with him where we're just walking from point A to point B, and he's in such a rush as if the next step has more joy in it than the one he's in. It's like there's just something about our mode, and you know, we are products of our environment, and so much of that is probably this industry that's always trying to influence us, and they take whatever our, I don't know if I want to say weak link in our psychology, whatever hole, like the need to fit in or the or like shame or whatever, and like it they will encourage us to manifest that in the way that we relate to our money and our spending habits, and you know, what you do with your time and money is really showing like your priorities, like what you or truly care about. You know, that's it's mm-hmm. like two things that we vote with: our time and attention, and our dollars.
Yes.
And, I mean, now there's like a new phenomenon, and you know, this is a byproduct of, I guess, parents wanting their kids to be better off than them, which is noble, of course, mm-hmm. and great, and maybe not to endure. They want them to endure hardship, but not as much hardship as they had to. And now there's a population of people that have like guilt associated with privilege that's born out of that. And they don't want anybody to know that they have money. They don't want to show that, they don't want to buy nice things. They don't feel like they deserve it. And like, I know personally with me, I had like self-worth issues, a good portion of my life, and my money behaviors showcase that with like self-sabotaging by, you know, making bad financial decisions and taking crazy risks unnecessarily, because on some deep subconscious level, I probably didn't feel like I was worth making good decisions about it.
Yeah, I think it's a very subjective journey, right, for everyone. And so, you know, this certainly for me is not wagging a finger at anyone. I think if anything, it's more trying to showcase someone's story rather than me proselytizing for a solution or giving advice. But yes, you bring up some magnificent points. I think, you know, when people meet me for the first time, maybe it's at an event or they are recommended to come and chat with me about their personal financial health, the first thing that I remind them is that personal finance is much more personal than it is finance, right? And so you're quite right to identify that you almost need to get to the bottom of not just what makes you tick, but really laying yourself bare about what it is you want and why.
At the Mindful Movement Podcast, we talk a lot about the small shifts that make a big difference. And lighting, it's one of the most overlooked pieces of your well-being. That's why we're excited to share Chromalux light bulbs from healthlighting.com. These aren't your average light bulbs. Chromalux lights are designed to support your natural rhythms, reducing unnatural light spectrums and supporting a more balanced environment that feels better for your eyes and your mind. The difference is not just seen, but felt. Whether you're curating your workspace, winding down in the evening, or just trying to make your home feel a little more peaceful, the right light matters. Sarah and I have been steadily making the switch throughout our home, and its impact really makes a difference. It's honestly kind of hard to explain, but the space has become noticeably more inviting. If you're ready to bring more intention into your environment, head to healthlighting.com and explore Chromalux bulbs. And as a part of our mindful community, you can get a special discount. Just use code MINDFULMOVEMENT at checkout. Light your space, support your mind, and keep on moving. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it, most of all, is that even though it could work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
You know, everyone has a different journey. I think we're all meant to experience what comes our way. And I don't want to wax, you know, philosophical or, you know, religious in any way. But what I will say is that you highlighted something that's very unique and interesting about this journey, which is if you're at the bottom end of society, you're struggling for the basic feelings of security and safety, right? Whether that's where the next meal's coming from, where the roof is over my head this evening, you haven't any time to ponder what you and I are discussing, right? It's just, I've got to get after it. I've got to reset and exist and create that safety for myself. In the middle, of course, there's the journey. There's building, you know, not just a lifestyle, but a family perhaps, or, you know, getting oneself established. And then with that establishment and a bit of, I don't want to call it discipline, I'd rather call it ritual. You begin to build a bit of financial safety and security into the equation. And at the very upper end, and perhaps this is, you know, what you're referencing with your friend, I'll say in my experience, knowing some exceedingly wealthy people, it becomes a trap, or it can be, because all of a sudden, everybody knows that you're the king dollar, right? You've got the most money of anyone that someone knows. And everyone's coming with their hand out, right? The baby birds' mouths are open and they're screaming. And so the issue is, whom can I trust, right? Does someone just want me for my money, or do they want me for me? So one of the episodes that we've already aired in the podcast, the second one that came out, I had a sit down with an Orthodox Jewish rabbi. And I was very interested in the dynamic of raising money and his perspectives, et cetera, et cetera. Very affable, super nice guy. And he told the story of a dear friend of his, who he grew up with as a child, who happens to be from a billionaire type of family. He, you know, didn't put a number on it, but let's just assume this is the child of a billionaire. And his father died when he was quite young. And the rabbi said, after my friend's father died, he rung me up and he said, "Let me ask you something, Shaya. Am I different to you? Do I look different or sound different to you at all?" And he said, "No, why?" He said, "Well, because a month ago, before my father died, when we would go to board meetings, no one wanted to hear my opinion about anything. And now that my father's died and I control the money, everybody's yesing me to death. Everybody thinks my ideas are brilliant. So what changed? What changed is I have money." And that is a really tough spot to be in, believe it or not, right? I'm not in that position.
I would think it'd be hard to build real friendships.
I think it can be. I think it can be a very lonely place, right? And so, look, the point of what I'm getting after is I think that there is a contentment or a place that we can come to, each of us, where we feel very comfortable in our own skin, right? We feel, whether we're proud of what we've done or ashamed of what we've done or whatever it is, everyone's got it in the same, big glass jar, and you can shake it up and pull a ticket out and see, oh yeah, that I wasn't proud of, or that I did an amazing job with. And I think what we're missing is coming together as a collective, right? Whether that's with friends or family or whomever, and admitting a lot of the stuff that we did that we're not proud of, right? Talking about almost the sort of things that we would be ashamed to put on our resume, right? And I had that conversation with a guest as well that was super interesting. This gentleman that I listened to at a corporate event was a former Navy SEAL, team leader in the SEALs, and came to talk about a couple of the operations that they performed in the Persian Gulf. And he told this great story about now as a civilian, right, or someone who's not in active duty, he runs security businesses. And he said, one night, I had a stack of resumes that I had to get through because we're businesses, expanding like crazy. We've got a lot of people applying for jobs. And as I sat there and looked at these resumes, they all looked the same, right? And he said, look, if I wanted to put my resume out there to the world, sure. I've done some great things. I've gone to wonderful schools. I was in the SEAL team, et cetera, et cetera. I can hang and purport myself as someone wonderful too. But he said, I opened a bottle of bourbon and I was getting more and more frustrated as I went through this stack of resumes. And I said to myself, fuck it. I'm going to write my anti-resume and take it into work. And so he did. And he plopped this anti-resume down on the boardroom table in front of his executive leadership. And he said, this is all the stuff that I've done that I'm not proud of. This is the stuff that probably will make some of you want to get up and leave the room and not work with us anymore. But I want to challenge everyone here to go home and write your own anti-resume and bring it back. And let's all share them together. Ooh. And he said the results were phenomenal. He said there was never something I've ever done in my decades of leading teams that coalesced a whole team functioning together, giving each other empathy, being understanding and very supportive of each other as that exercise. And so I think in some ways the same is true of money, right? You and I talked about this in our podcast episode. We don't teach our kids about money, and we don't teach our kids about food in school. The two things that you'll interact with every single day for the rest of your life, we're leaving out of the curriculum. You would probably argue movement should be in there as well, and I'm not here to argue with that. I think you're right. So, yeah, it's a very strange thing because we so often let money keep the score in society. Oh, look at this guy. He just sold his business for X. Or look at this one over here. They won the lottery, right? Or whatever. But I think, A, we've not seen the work that went in to get them there, right? Which is probably, maniacal and very, very difficult to sustain for most people. Secondly, we haven't heard at what expense have they attained their financial wealth. And thirdly, what I would say is that we haven't actually exposed why we care so much about someone with so much money, because what are they doing with it? We don't really know, right? We don't know how the billionaire class invests. We don't know how they give charity a lot of times. We can discern it every once in a while. I think we're hearing little bits and pieces now as Mr. Buffett's in his mid-90s about the new ways and creative ways that he's deciding to give charity, which is great. God bless. But I think that's really part of what comes out in these conversations that we're having is in order to get in life, one must give. We have to give in order to receive. And if it's just about me, 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 me all the time and not we or not what's the zeitgeist around this and how can we change it? I think it becomes dangerous. And so to your point about parents that coddle their kids. I mean, I struggle with this, right? To what extent should I make life difficult for my daughter versus, you know, allowing her to enjoy the fruits of my labor, right? It's a great question. It's difficult, right? We know that the baby bird needs to struggle like hell to break out of that egg and live, right? And that there is a certain amount of stress, to use your lingo, that I think is very accretive to living a better life, right? We often come into contact with the idea of get comfortable being uncomfortable in my practice, right? Because we grow in discomfort. If we're too comfortable, we stagnate and we just sort of splat, right? If we're too uncomfortable, then we're in ultra stress mode. We can't really get a lot done. We can't be thoughtful. We're just surviving. And so that middle ground, that threshold of discomfort, actually invites a lot of growth in our lives. And I think that's something that I want to showcase, because I don't think we talk enough about that, right? And I think we should. And it doesn't need to be working oneself threadbare. It can be sometimes. It doesn't have to be. But I think it has to involve more of a, hey, let's just level up and be honest about this in society, instead of, you know, sort of keeping the secrets hidden. And then, you know, only when you've made X amount of money does the door open to participate in right, whatever, you know, sort of endeavors, or the secret handshake to ultra success. And again, that for me, ultra success is not equated to dollar signs, right? I think it is, to an extent. You know, you want to have money to buy back your time, to have options of how to, you know, use the energy and whatever time we have available to us here. But it's not Shangri-La. Shangri-La is life itself, in my opinion, right? Life is the gift, right? And being born in this body, you know, with the best technology on the planet, that's the gift. And I can keep telling myself that until I'm blue in the face, but there's nothing like finding ways to experience that to reinforce the intellectual concept. And so, yeah, that's where I feel as though my practice is a little bit different as a financial advisor, because I'm truly inviting people to embrace that provocation, to go after what's most important to them. And that could be radically different from what I care about, but that's okay. You know, it's their life, it's their time, and it's what they've worked so hard to get a taste of. So, you know, why would we go anywhere else but there, is my opinion.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You said a lot there. I mean, some of those ideas I feel like could be really hard to hear or to deploy when you are on, let's say, the bottom of the K-shaped economy that I'm always hearing about. And, you know, there's some, I feel like even when you allude to the idea of, you know, that balance point between helping your kids and letting them struggle, I feel like that struggle gets harder every generation because of the structural flaws in our economic system, which I do think creates a lot of animosity between like the haves and have nots. And you see this, like, I don't want to get political, but you see in the political sphere, a lot of things that are like, you know, falling on the divide. Well, that really, I think underlying all that is that there's a structural component to the way our economy works that really helps the top of the K do better and holds the bottom of the K down. And I think it's very important to have like the empowerment of education, especially yes, for the people at the bottom of the K, to understand the game a little bit more so yes, that you can participate. And I think there's a lot of people that probably don't feel like their finances are good, and maybe they're not, objectively not good, that don't play the game they need to play because they don't feel like they have enough that it's yeah, worth playing.
Yeah.
And it's like you have to understand why you have to play so that you could get started. But like you know, in the school system, they teach inflation like it's good. You know, one of the blessings of the COVID era, I feel like, is more people learned about inflation. And they're like, yeah, that's the source of so many things screwing over poor people. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and that's not going away because it's like it's structurally part of our system. And you could be mad at that. You could be happy. You could fight it, whatever. The important thing, I think, is to understand it and then start doing something about it, no matter how small it is. I mean, I've never been like wealthy financially, but I remember doing well in econ class freshman year of college, and I learned enough to know that start early. It doesn't matter how small. And one of the greatest things I did was when my kids were born, I put like a little bit away. And it was like, it started like really small. It was like $25 a month. Like I didn't have anything really. But I just knew that that was important to like be a part of the game and let like, you know, Apple stock do its thing for me or whatever.
Yeah.
And like looking back at all my crappy financial decisions that I am ashamed of, that I would not want to put on my anti-resume because of guilt and shame or whatever. And that sounds like a terrifying experience. I have to share that. But which it also sounds like a brilliant idea. But like when I look back at that anti-resume, like the one thing that's like, oh, at least like you did this one smart thing. And I feel like there's so many people out there that I just want them to know that you can, like you have enough, whatever it is, you have enough to start changing your like relationship with money and losing some of the bad vibes that we all carry around that relationship.
Yeah.
And the more you understand, like, everything's kind of stacked against you unless you're really rich. But you still have like so much control over the dials that over time can have a profound effect on what your life can look like down the road and how much time you could buy back and how much you could invest in the people that you care about or the charities you care about. And I mean, I don't know. And, you know, it's kind of, to me, and maybe this is just like, I'm just such a cynic of like the media and governments or something. But like, one thing I see when you put like the TV on, they don't talk like they're not, it doesn't feel like they're trying to help people. And instead you get like these political divides where some people just want to take from other people. And it's kind of short-sighted because they don't understand maybe the economic laws underlying the, you know, there's economic laws that we can't really hide from. You know, it's just like, I can't just decide to ignore gravity and go try out for the NBA. Like these things are not just, they're like hardwired into the DNA of like the matter that makes up the earth. Like you're not bypassing them without a price to pay. But I feel like people on a population level don't know. They don't understand what they are. So they ask the wrong questions, they get the wrong answers, and it leads to people pointing fingers at each other and like othering them or enemying them, or they expect this group to do this for this group. And I wish more people had like a more basic understanding of how the system works in hopes to like empower them to not just bring themselves up, but all the people in their life and their communities and their environment.
Yeah. Well, I will say a couple things to that. Now I've not traveled the entire world, but I lived abroad for many years and I've done a fair bit of traveling. And I will say in defense of the US that within a single generation, I think this is the best country in the world if you're starting at the bottom, and it is absolutely possible and attainable to get and accrue somewhere between one and say $10 or $15 million in a generation, right? I think with hard work and just steady, maybe it's putting $25 away a month for your kids or whatever it is, paying yourself first, being mindful of, you know, I want to get there. Whatever there is, from a financial perspective, I still think this is the best playing field that exists on the planet. But there's an old adage, and it exists in America and everywhere else in the world, which is, you know, with the cycle of wealth creation and entropy, it's a very real threat on both sides of that bell curve, right? So the guy that the sheikh that brought the Emirates together to form the UAE had a great expression. He said, "My grandfather rode a camel. My father rode a camel. I drive a Mercedes. My son drives a Range Rover. No doubt his son will drive a Range Rover, but his son will ride a camel," right? So you have to protect whatever it is, whether it's the ethos, you know, the underpinnings that allow you to have perhaps a better relationship with money, perhaps a better understanding of just how small our life is. You know, where do we plug in terms of what, you know, what would the title of my chapter be in the book of my family history, right? So just, you know, it's kind of like, I love that moment when you take off in the airplane and you're up, say, at 10 or 12,000 feet and rising, and you look down and you see all these little tiny homes looking like specks of sand on the beach. And you just think, why am I so carried away with myself or, you know, what I'm building? It's, and it's gone. You know, it would just evaporate. And that's okay, right? I mean, I think there's a playfulness that you have to invite into some of these bigger questions. Because the reality is, if we're doing what fascinates us in life and what really switches us on, I think we're already engaged to the point where we're not as attuned to the stuff, you know, what else is going to make me happy? Because you almost lose track of time when you're doing what you love, right? So I think that's part of the work. And I think the other part is just to say, again, do I have to keep up with the Joneses? You know, who are the Joneses? I would encourage anyone who feels as though they're struggling, you know, to move upward, to invite someone out, invite the most successful person you know out for coffee, and just ask them how they did it. Most people that are successful want to pay forward the knowledge and the experience that they've accrued, right? And that's part of why I'm so lucky to, you know, be inviting people to come and talk on my podcast, and they're willing to do it because it's worth something to be able to say, I don't know how you're going to do it, but here's how I did it. And that is a huge, huge risk when you feel like, how could I possibly approach person X and, you know, get them to divulge the secrets of, it actually isn't very difficult. I think most people are willing to give 5, 10, 15 minutes of time, 30 minutes of time. And as long as you're prepared, as long as you have thoughtful questions and things that are really important for you to understand, I think anyone in a given industry is willing to divulge what it took to get them to where they are. A lot of it is luck. Some of it is flirtation with failure and disaster. But you'll see it's a cocktail of all sorts, right? So education, as you say, very, very important if you're coming from the bottom of the K, right? Because education is something no one can take away from you. No matter what happens to you financially, you get thrown in prison, whatever it is, no one can take away your education. But there are other things as well. And I think, you know, certainly health is one. One of the things that I challenge my clients to do is to what they tell you to do in the airplane, right? Put on your own oxygen mask first before you help those around you if the cabin pressure drops. In other words, make sure that you are doing enough so that you're not putting a pothole out there in the road that you'll fall into and have a panic over about, hey, wait, am I going to be okay now? Because I've helped all these other people, right? But keep things in perspective. In other words, if it's all just for me, you know, one of the great sayings I've loved my entire adult life since I heard it is, if I'm not for myself, who will be? if I am only for myself, who am I? And I think that is a summation of what we're up against in the US a lot of times, right? Is we're encouraged to develop our own little consumption bubble, right? So it's not enough for you and your wife, Sarah, to have a computer in your office. Your kids each need a computer in their room. And then everybody needs a phone, and everybody needs a this, and everybody needs a that. And so you're constantly going, well, wait, why don't I have this? Or what's going on here? And instead of feeling as though, hang on a second, you know, it's almost like creating a tool library with your neighbors, right? I've got a wrench, you've got a screwdriver, he's got a weed whacker, she's got a couple of shovels. What if we just built a shed and put all the stuff in there and sign it out and bring it back? Why do we all need all this stuff? And I think some of that was born out of our history. You know, I think we've come by it honestly after the Second World War in particular. I think the big push was, let's get all these men working. Let's get household formation going. Let's kind of, you know, we had technology coming alongside. So we had a refrigerator all of a sudden, or we had all these appliances and everyone wanted a car. And so, you know, look, it's not some wicked game, in my opinion, that's been, you know, puppeteered by, you know, evil masters that we've never seen or heard of. But
I
think
disagree on that one, Brian.
Well, I mean, look, I haven't met them anyway. I'll put it that way. But I think to an extent, you know, it again is, you know, who works for who?
At the Mindful Movement podcast, we talk a lot about the small shifts that make a big difference. And lighting, it's one of the most overlooked pieces of your well-being. That's why we're excited to share Chromalux light bulbs from healthlighting.com. These aren't your average light bulbs. Chromalux lights are designed to support your natural rhythms, reducing unnatural light spectrums and supporting a more balanced environment that feels better for your eyes and your mind. The difference is not just seen, but felt. Whether you're curating your workspace, winding down in the evening, or just trying to make your home feel a little more peaceful, the right light matters. Sarah and I have been steadily making the switch throughout our home, and its impact really makes a difference. It's honestly kind of hard to explain, but the space has become noticeably more inviting. If you are ready to bring more intention into your environment, head to healthlighting.com and explore Chromalux bulbs. And as a part of our Mindful community, you can get a special discount. Just use code MINDFULMOVEMENT at checkout. Light your space, support your mind, and keep on moving. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it, most of all, is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
You know, in other words, I'm working for money, yes, but at some point, the money's got to work for me. I can't just work for it my entire life. Otherwise, what have I done with my time? What have I done with the gift of my life that really matters, right? It's great if, you know, I've got a whatever logo on something, or, you know, wonderful. If that makes you feel incrementally better, knock yourself out. And I think we all have guilty pleasures, no matter whether it's, you know, from food that we eat or whatever. You know, we want to develop some sort of great relationship and balance with this stuff. But
we always want better stuff. It is hard. Like, humans like to make new, better stuff.
Well, yeah, because that's right. That's part of how we continue to evolve.
Separates us from like the other animals in the kingdom. We don't.
Yeah,
there's just something unique about us, and it's a feature and a bug.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say one of my spiritual leaders that I follow, and he'd be uncomfortable with me saying it that way, but he's a South Indian guru, very, very great being. He says, if you observe animals, if the stomach is empty, they have one problem. If the stomach is full, they have no problems. And then you look at humans. If the stomach is empty, we have one problem. If the stomach is full, we have 100 problems, right? So, you know,
that sums it up.
That's it, right? Because we're in a very tough bind of always wanting to expand, right? We want to expand to infinity, right? We feel as though we have this, what they call in yoga, the Atman, like the morsel of the divine within us. And by definition, the divine is infinite, beyond time, beyond space. You know, again, whether one believes in that or not, I'll leave to you. But I do think there is a constant drive within us to expand. It doesn't need to just be physically, right? It can be, you know, spiritually, emotionally, you know, intellectually. But we always want to go deeper and find, I guess, our version of truth is what I would argue. And they shouldn't be the same versions of truth, I don't think. So that's, you know, again, difficult to develop a curriculum that one can systematize or make ubiquitous for people. But yeah, I think, you know, it's sort of when the student is ready, the teacher appears. For most people in your life, if you're honest, you have a couple people that you admire, and you may not even know why. And I think those are the people perhaps to invite for that proverbial coffee and just sort of say, hey, you know, you just have this thing. And I can't articulate it or describe it, or maybe I can, but how do you do it? How'd you get there? And just shut up and listen. I think it's a lot of fun. I mean, I've learned a ton from you and Sarah just listening to your perspectives and the amazing people that you have on your podcast. And so I think, thankfully, for this technology anyway, we have this amazing medium to tune in and listen long form to an entire roller coaster, right? An entire journey of what people have been through that captivate us or that interest us. And it's incredibly compelling, you know, but I will say it's more about the signal, right? It's less of like this thing that I have that we all tend to have is nothing without the signal. And so I think that's more than anything what I hope to somehow bring about or coach out of people and get them to understand is that there is a thread that rhymes between all human experience. And instead of seeing ourselves separate and distinct from the struggles of other people, if, again, back to that anti-resume idea, we could all just sort of lay ourselves bare, what's the worst that could happen, right? That you connect with people, that you somehow, you know, be vulnerable and if you're not held or if you're rejected, I don't know. I think we've got 8 billion people to mingle with on the planet. So, you know, does it have to be this one or that one? I'm not so sure. There we go.
Speaking of being vulnerable, I mean, on your podcast, you're doing long form conversations with, I know some of your clients and people that have, you know, been successful in some way. And my guess is like, there's not a lot of those conversations where people dive deep into the things outside of the numbers that are associated with developing the numbers. And there's so many like dynamic, interpersonal dynamics that people deal with, especially within a family. I mean, one thing I recognize in getting to know you is like we shared a certain value as far as like how we valued ideas around family. And when I would, you know, ask you questions about, like, I would pick your brain, I would kind of steal your services while you were paying me and I should be putting attention on you and what you're doing in the gym, I would often sneak in selfish questions about financial stuff because I am playing the role of like managing my family's finances more so than anybody else. And there's and I, you know, I'm learning on the job for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I know some basic things, but I'm definitely like fumbling through on my own and just picking your brain. But it's clear that like you would pose questions and at least be interested in like how my questions or how like monetary ideas relate to the family system as a whole, not just current, but future and big picture. And I wonder about like how the family dynamics that people have, because like the toughest relationships we have are generally the people we care the most about. Like yeah. The people closest to us. And
yes.
In families, there's, especially with like when there's like generational stuff, I would assume there's such complex relationships and dynamics between family. And I would think that that presents as obstacles, like challenges, also mm-hmm. probably opportunities for growth and getting and building stronger connections with families. Absolutely. But what are some of like the more common like family dynamics that you see when working with the family and helping them try to manage the whole money side of things?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think rather than give a specific example or two, the easiest way for me to frame this, I'll qualify it by addressing a point you just made. You said some of the hardest relationships are with the most important relationships we have in our family. And I think in many ways it's because our family can call bullshit on us, right? They know the good, the bad, the ugly. They may not know how we show up at work, right? Because we often aren't with our family for the majority of the daytime. But I think what's really important to recognize when it comes to money and succession and opportunity afforded to subsequent generations, et cetera, is not just this sort of guilt, right? Oh, you had all these opportunities that I never had, you know, figure it out, do something with it, right? That's not very helpful. I think what's very helpful is to look at the family system as a smattering of different types of capital, right? So we have financial capital that looms large in my business. But financial capital, more often than not in families, is stewarded by one member of the household, whether it's the matriarch or the patriarch. Someone's got controls on the financial capital. But very often, someone else has and holds the social capital in a family, or the spiritual capital in a family, or the intellectual capital in a family. And so I think the more we can step back from ourselves and recognize that to have the highest functioning system possible, we must actually yield to the various members of our family and say, look, you're so much more social and involved. Your network is phenomenal. You have this amazing Rolodex of people. You go into a room and you have no fear or compunction about introducing yourself or networking or being a maven to connect other people. You should hold that for the family, right? And on it goes. So that could be kids, that could be, you know, grandparents, that could be whomever. And I think we have this unfortunate pattern a lot of times in America, and I know you're not luckily, you know, one of them, but I'll say I'm in that position, right? Where yes, I live in a house with my child, but I don't live with my parent or, you know, parents. I never was living in the household with my grandparents when I was young. And I missed huge opportunities to understand not just whom I've come from, but their journey because of that, right? Like the other day I got an email from my aunt that detailed my grandfather's entire experience being, you know, drafted or conscripted into World War II. And everything that he went through both during the war and afterward that he'd never told me as a child. And maybe I was too young to absorb it. I don't know. But I thought, man, I really wish I could have had the opportunity to interface with that a little bit, with him still present to respond, you know, in a necessary way. And so, you know, when I see things like estate plans being drafted, right, I am a big proponent of having a will and having estate documents for people so that at least they have a bit of control over the structure and distribution of whatever they've amassed, you know, in terms of property or, you know, financial assets in their lifetime. But I think very often that is written by lawyers for lawyers. It's just to avoid probate from, you know, state adjudication or administration. And what's missing is the human thread that runs through that all, right? In other words, it's very difficult. And I've had these meetings where it's like herding cats. You know, you get mom and dad and the adult children in a room that probably already have their own kids. And hey, everybody, it's time to sit down and talk about the plan that we put together and why we put it together. And someone's got to get a glass of water and then someone else needs the toilet. And it's really, really difficult to share that space in a constructive manner because there's a lot of scar tissue. There's a lot of pent up stuff. There's a lot of, you know, I want to go this way. Why are you making me go that way? Type of undercurrent in a family dynamic. And so in many ways, I play a bad cop, right? As a provocateur, but also as someone who's trying to set, you know, a mood for, it's okay. You know, however we respond, it's okay. We need to listen, right? Two ears, one mouth kind of thing. Listen to each other. And then, you know, not necessarily take quick action, but let things, you know, filter and distill a little bit before we come to a place of understanding how to slowly, you know, loosen that grip on whether it's the purse strings, right? And enable kids to experiment and fail, or experiment and succeed, or educate everyone else in the family because they're very interested and fascinated with something that no one else really cares about. You know, you're in the middle of that right now, and I don't know, you know, how much you want to share about it, but I think it's wonderful, right? You've encouraged your children to be true to themselves, to dare to do that, and to look at the traditional path, you know, and the stepping stones that are set out before us, you know, as kind of that bridge from adolescence to adulthood with a healthy dose of skepticism and whether or not they will find their peace or fulfillment by, you know, following the herd or doing whatever their friends did that they went to high school with. And look, the answer is different for everyone, right? So I don't know if that directly answers the question that you brought up, but I think family dynamics is very, very important, right? Some parents have the view that, you know, I earned this, I made it, it's mine, and Maybe there'll be some left for my kids at the end of the rainbow. Maybe there won't be. Some parents want to split it absolutely to the penny, evenly between their children in terms of gifts they give or things they do. I have a client that keeps a ledger in his office of everything he's given to his adult kids so that it is even, so that it's equanimous, right? So that no one feels slighted or left out or, you know. Anyway,
well, I try not to be judgmental, but when I hear someone say, like, I earned this, I worked for it, I'm going to bounce the check to my funeral, basically. And that, you know, it's like that sounds just kind of gross to me. But
it is gross.
And who am I to judge? But
sure.
I guess I'm judging.
I don't know that it's about judgment.
But it's like all of our things, I do think, are born out of something deeper psychologically that is some type of belief system that is just maladaptive in that context at that point in our lives, in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the other thing that I think is a great starting point, and I'll bookend our, you know, family dynamic thread with this. I think a great starting point for a family dynamics exercise, right, without flying too close to the fire, is everyone should bring an idea for charitable giving to the Thanksgiving table, right? It can be very small, could be $50, $100, doesn't matter, right? But that everyone, grandkids all the way up, you know, whoever you've got, nieces, nephews, cousins, who cares? Everyone comes ready to talk about if they could give charity, where would they give it and why? And I think that's a great way softly to open both the awareness and the ability for families to row together, right? And say, okay, that's great. You know, you want to give money to the zoo because you really care that the penguins are well looked after. Wonderful. You know, who cares? Or, you know, it can breed all sorts of other synchronicity between families, and also create a collective identity, right? That this is something that we do, and here's why, right? Again, not all of us are lucky enough to have those families, right? My parents divorced when I was 2 years old. I didn't have some, you know, ideal storybook childhood where, you know, it was Leave It to Beaver type stuff, right? But at the same time, that's okay. I think, again, the adversity and the, you know, difficulty that we experience provides us with other gifts, right? So it shouldn't just be woe is me. It should be, wow, you know what? I've had to develop this skill set because I didn't have a choice. And now it's a huge gift. And
it's
here's
why. It's your capital, like you mentioned.
Right.
Like
it's a form of capital. Absolutely. A form of capital. Social capital or whatever. Right. So, yeah, I think giving is the easiest way to coalesce. And, you know, I will say to a person, some of the most successful people that I advise and that I'm lucky enough to work with and spend time with, enjoy giving it away more than they ever did earning it. And that is a pretty powerful thing to say. I know it doesn't sound like it makes sense at first pass or first glance, but it can absolutely be true. Because again, it's an involvement, right? And it's not often just a money thing. It's a time thing. It's, you know, seeing the incremental difference, seeing the way that my thumbprint can somehow, you know, push the world to a better place. So, yeah.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, I had a client in the gym for years, and this is a man that I really admired, and he had a crazy story. I mean, drop out of high school, military, went on to build a very successful, started from nothing, construction company, wind up selling it for like many, many tens of millions of dollars. And I remember working with him, and he was one of those guys that you would never know he had any money. Mm-hmm. Always came to the gym, same. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked with him for maybe close to a decade. Same pair of flip flops. He had like two T-shirts. He was always wearing either one or the other. Mm-hmm. I think he might have worn pretty much the same shorts for like years. And I've worked with him twice a week. Like,
it's great.
Just very honest, but always so happy. Always mm-hmm. in a good mood. And he told me over the years, like, he would always, he would give away 10% of his income. And, you know, when you put in perspective of how much of his income was, it was like, that was a lot of money. And I couldn't believe it. And he was such a, like, sweet, peaceful, always, like, you just wanted to be around him kind of person. Yeah. Yeah. And that, I don't think that was a coincidence. And,
no.
You know, he always, and he always, like, saw good in people, and he was just, like, a happy guy. And there's something to be said for, like, that package. Like, that is not a coincidence. Yes. How that shows up in the world.
Yeah.
And it probably had played a role in his success and ability to do so well in business. Like, people probably liked working with him.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted to be around him and, you know, get those
vibes. The law of attraction at work. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's a really interesting concept you mentioned about the different capital. It makes me think of why, like, Sarah has a million followers on YouTube and I cook dinner every night and we're both really happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the cooking dinner. Like, we all have, like, everybody has different roles, and I think it is important to, you know, lower expectations of what you think they ought to be based on what society tells you they should be, and embrace your strengths and see the good in each other and use those as tools to build, you know, healthier relationships and cultivate the things that you actually care about in life that matter long term, which yeah. which really to me are your relationships ultimately.
100%.
Well, I this has been fun, Brian. So you have the podcast. You're putting out. It's called The Brian Turner Show.
Yes, it's called The Brian Turner Show. The subtitle is Living the Wealthy Life. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. Please have a look. I'd love to hear anyone's comments. Please, you know, like, follow, subscribe, and
all those things.
Share
it's
with others.
It's got a great aesthetic, by the way. I don't know.
Thank you. Thank you. And your favorite podcast host, Les Raymond, will be coming out, airing next week. So let's see. That is now going to be the 14th of April, day before tax day. You get to listen to Les and your story. It's phenomenal, man. It's really just that I hope to continue. But I think you referenced something amazing, which is, you know, this idea that rich screams and wealth whispers, right? So a lot of times the people who truly have wealth in our orbit and in our society are very unassuming. And, you know, it's not about them. It's about us, right? And that whatever has come to them, I'm sure has come through very, you know, hard work and focus. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't need to be Dolce Gabbana and, you know, look at my whatever it is. because oftentimes, you know, there's nothing to see behind that curtain with people, right? And so I think you're right. I think assuming that we can see the best in everyone, assuming that we're here to learn, I think learning is a lifelong journey that the most successful people I work with are on constantly. And it's not that they're unsatisfied, it's that they're curious. They're curious about the world, they're curious about life, and they feel blessed to partake in whatever comes next. So, yeah, this has been a lot of fun, man. I really appreciate it and very much look forward to a next one and a next one at some point. We'll check
and
back
more importantly,
in with
the next round of golf. What, by the way, you have the podcast, but you also work with people, like you said,
I do. And
families. If
yes.
somebody is looking to get some wealth advice, whether they're already working with somebody and they want a second opinion, or they are just, you know, have never done that and they want to see
yes.
what that's like and see if you would be a good fit, how do they do that? You work for a company.
How do they reach
out to you? What's the best way to reach out to you to see if you would help them with their, like, money situation?
I would say probably email or LinkedIn. So I'm on LinkedIn. I work for an independent advisory firm called Procyon. It's Procyon. My email is bturner@procyon.net. I always love having a conversation about whether it would be a good fit between me and a prospective client. And if, you know, if it is, fantastic. I think that has to be a two-way decision. And if not, that's okay. And either, you know, I may be able to recommend someone else to have a chat with, or, you know, at worst, we've gotten to know a new person and we wish each other well. So I would love that. Thank you very much. And yeah, I think similarly, one of the things that I've invited many people to please respond with is, if you know someone who you think embodies living the wealthy life, for whatever reason, I'd love an offline introduction just to have that conversation and see, you know, whether or not their story and you know, them coming to bring that to bear on the podcast would be fruitful and successful. So thanks
that's
again.
That's a great idea. I mean, there's a lot of amazing stories out there. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's it. And it's all around us. And if only we knew that stuff, kind of like the anti-resume idea, right? If only we knew that stuff and just how magnificent even my neighbors are and what they've been through or whatever. I think, again, it's a way to coalesce. I remember in college, I watched some documentary about the rumble in the jungle between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. And one of the journalists that they were interviewing, I think it was George Plimpton, said that Muhammad Ali was asked to come and give the commencement speech at Harvard University. And he started off with the shortest poem in the English language, which was, "Me, we." And I think the more we can lean into we, I think we've had a lot of me in our lifetimes, at least in modern America. So I think the more we can lean into we, the better. And honestly, you know, do it vulnerably and embrace it. We'll learn a lot from each other and we'll respect each other more. So there
yeah,
we
well
go.
Well said. I appreciate that. Well, it's good to connect with you in this context, Brian. And for
yeah,
the listeners, always grateful for your listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And if you have a question for Brian, send him an email, or if you have something to share to the community about maybe your thoughts about this conversation, if it triggered anything inside you that you want to get out, leave it in a comment, and I look forward to responding to that. I hope everybody enjoys and enjoy the rest of your day. And I'll see you on the golf course, Brian.
Thank you, Les. It's a huge pleasure. Be well.